Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Friday. We're going to talk some USC football on a Friday, which is a little different. But today, August 3rd, is the first day of USC Fall Camp 2018. So we wanted to get Dan Weber on to kind of give a little bit of a preview of what we're expecting to see over these next few weeks of fall camp. Lots of questions that need to be answered heading into the opener September 1st against UNLV. If you have any questions or comments, you can email us podcast@uscfootball.com or give us a call or text us. The number is 424-254-9141. We got some voicemails today. We got some text messages we need to play for you today. So we'll talk about all of that with Dan Weber, who's on the line right now. What's up, Dan? How are you doing?
Doing good. Can't wait to get started this afternoon. This is what it seems like. It's come fairly quickly. It doesn't seem like all that long ago we were in spring practice, and spring didn't seem to come that much after the Ohio State game. So this year's kind of moved quickly. It looks like to me. It just has that feeling that we're there sooner than maybe we anticipated.
Yeah, we talked about that on our live show yesterday. We do a show called Tunnel Vision now on Facebook Live and YouTube and Periscope. And it's kind of one of those things where it's here. It's kind of crazy that it's happened. And, having the coaches poll come out yesterday, that makes it feel more real. Of course, Pac-12 Media Day. But I don't know. I felt like it was kind of slow for a while, but then it kind of picked up speed. And I don't know, maybe it's just my age, but it's getting here faster than you think. But then at sometimes you felt it was kind of slow too.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I thought the Pac-12 Media Day was the most understated Pac-12 Media Day that I can ever remember. I mean, there were always, it seemed like, some kind of a burning issue of one kind or the other or whatever. And that wasn't the case at Pac-12 Media Day. It was just really matter of fact, down to earth, just get going and, nothing like no big deal. No, even with the five new coaches, it just, you didn't have any of that sense. It was more like, okay, that's what you do. And then let's, move on. And we are. But, this is an interesting year. I just year three, I think is really important for Clay Helton and company. USC has a history. You go back to Howard Jones. If USC has a great coaching staff, they're going to win national championships. I don't know which comes first, but, if you're a great coach and you're at USC, you're going to win national championships. And if you're not, it can be really, not very special. And I think the one thing we've decided, looking at all, all the years, is USC is always going to have players. And the deciding factor, and that's not, unusual at almost every place, I think the thing that's different at USC has always been, you get a great coach at USC, he's going to win a national championship or two or whatever, and we'll see. I mean, I think that's the question, for Clay Helton and company is, where do they fit on that, range of, coaches at USC? And it's something that's evolving. I mean, I don't think we know exactly, where Clay is going to be able to go, how he's going to be able to evolve. But when you're at a school, there are only a handful, I think, of schools that have the resources, that have the history, that have the ability to recruit great players that can win national championships. And USC is one of them. They're not back in that, super elite group yet, but they're never far from it. And when it comes down to, you know, it comes down to the coaching.
It certainly does. Couldn't agree with you more. I think a lot of the fans on the Peristyle couldn't agree with you more. And we'll see what happens this season. It could be a wide range of results. We just don't know. Before we jump into that, we're going to preview fall camp, answer your questions. I wanted to talk a little bit about our sponsor, Lisa Beds. They've been great to us this last, you know, 6 months or so. And it was great. Chloe, our new intern, ended up buying one of the Lisa Beds too, using our little discount code. Lisa.com/USC. You get $160 off your Lisa mattress, and she needed a new mattress and she did that. It's a quality night's sleep. It will help you recover from distractions faster, prevent burnout, make better decisions, improve your memory, and overall make fewer mistakes. It's not marketing, it's science. To design a better mattress, Lisa leveraged 30 plus years of experience and hundreds of hours of testing to develop the perfect mattress for all body shapes and sleeping styles. Their mission is to provide a better night's sleep for every body through their 110 program. They donate one mattress for every 10 they sell, more than 26,000 mattresses and counting. So they strive to leave the world a better place than they found it, and it doesn't stop with the mattress donations. They've teamed up with the Arbor Day Foundation, and they plant one tree for every mattress they sell, and they're committed to planting 1 million trees by 2025. So we love it's a very conscious company about the environment and keeping the world and making the world a better place. So if you want to get $160 off your Lisa mattress, go to Lisa.com, LEESA.com/USC. That's Lisa.com/USC. And Dan, you brought up the great coach aspect. And if you have a great coach, you're always going to have players. You can win a national championship. I think we both agree. This is one of those seasons people ask, like, oh, how's the team going to do? I'm like, I mean, I could see them going like 11-1 and making the college football playoff, but I could, you know, there's potential to have like a 7-5 type of season too. It just seems like there's a wide range of what this team could do.
Yeah, I'll go with you on the 11-1. I'm not sure that they can drop off quite that far just because, it's the Pac-12. And, you know, I just think the Pac-12 really needs to find itself. They don't play Washington and Oregon. Not sure that Oregon matters all that much, but I just think it's hard to drop off. If you're USC and you drop off to 7-5 in the Pac-12, you've really done something wrong. I mean, it's the one reason, I think, the more you think about all the things that you're really not happy with, in the Pac-12 in terms of the, scheduling and, late night games and scheduling in ways in which, you really hurt your good team. So I was looking at Pat Forty of Yahoo Sports does a really interesting take of all the schedules in college football. He just kind of, comes up with things that are interesting, and I think one of the ones I found interesting was that at Auburn has only one plane trip and doesn't go to a state other than ones that are contiguous to Alabama, plays 8 home games, and, of course, plays its really tough games are the 2 of the last 3 weeks. And they do have to bust to Georgia. They do bust to Tuscaloosa for Alabama. But here's the SEC where, a bunch of schools that the Pac-12 schools would look down on and say, hey, they don't have any top 25 academic institutions there. But they've figured out in the SEC how not to play their good teams against one another at the beginning of the season. So those teams are going to stay ranked all year long until well into November. And here the Pac-12, with the, geniuses at SEC, at Stanford and geniuses at USC and all of that, have them playing one another the first game of the conference season. And it is pretty amazing how a conference can do things to hurt itself. You just wish they had some more sense about how you compete nationally and how you set up your schedule. And they're just clueless. I mean, it's just so. But, USC needs to take advantage of that and just say, you know, we're going to use the Pac-12. The one good thing about the Pac-12 is we're going to be able, with our recruiting, USC should be saying to itself, that we're going to be able to get to the, you know, the Final Four, the college football playoffs, almost every year. And they, that ought to be the expectation at this point, is, you know, as you said, you know, go 11-1, and you really got a shot. You know, had USC not lost to Washington State last year, again, a self-inflicted, you know, USC self-inflicted, its, you know, on itself by accepting the schedule. The Pac-12 self-inflicted that. And then at the end, I thought it was interesting. The other day, last week, Larry Scott said, oh, USC really didn't deserve to be there, you know, after the Washington State game. But that wasn't what he told us the right before the championship game kickoff, where he was trying to make the case that, oh, absolutely, USC should be in the running if they beat, you know, Stanford in the championship game. So Larry's got to get his story straight, and unfortunately, I'm not sure that's going to happen.
But, probably not.
You know, it just isn't, you know, I mean, he's got a tough story to deal with. When you made, when you probably, all the important decisions, you've gotten them wrong. It's a hard case to make if you're, you know, running the Pac-12. But, man, oh, man, this is, you know, this is not something where in the SEC, being a part of the SEC or being a part of the Big Ten helps the teams that are part of that. I don't think being a part of the Pac-12 helps anybody in the Pac-12. You just got to help yourself. I mean, Washington, I think, opens the year. They play Auburn. That's where they got to help themselves. And one of the things I think over the years, the Pac-12 has always played pretty decent schedules. And that's not happening anymore. The Pac-12 has kind of followed the lead. I think there are seven schools, for example, this year, that play not a single Power 5 non-conference opponent. And those are in the Pac-12 South, Utah and Arizona don't play a single Power 5 conference, a non-conference opponent. But while USC is one of five schools that plays 11 Power 5 opponents, only five schools in the country, or six schools, I guess, in the country do that. Whereas four of the seven who do not play any Power 5 opponents are in the Pac-12. So the Pac-12 has really gone the other way in recent years in terms of their scheduling philosophy. Oregon, for example, it looks like they have the worst non-conference schedule in the country. The three non-conference teams that Oregon plays had a record of 4-32 last year. So they play, you know, I'm not even, Portland State and, boy, I'm trying to think who else, Bowling Green and somebody else, just awful, awful opponents out of conference. So Pac-12 is not a place where you're going to help yourself all that much other than by dominating. And you got to win. If you're USC, then you got to win. You know, you got to beat Notre Dame and you got to beat Texas.
Yeah.
But that gives you the chance, and you can make. You know, you can certainly make the case for it. But only dominating in the Pac-12, I think, is the way to go for USC. And we haven't seen that. We've seen. I thought one stat I thought was interesting. I didn't even remember this. Last year, USC was trailing. Going into the fourth quarter in six games. I don't think I remember that they were trailing six games. They were behind as you went into the third quarter because they were like the worst third quarter team in college football. I mean, they were just awful. And Clay, you know, I asked Clay about that, and he said, well, we were really good in the fourth quarter. You better be. And they did win four of those six games. They won, you know, they came from behind. But why do they have to come from behind against, you know, many of the teams on that schedule? They should not have had to do that. So that's the kind of stuff I think they really got to get squared away this year.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Dan. And specifically with fall camp starting later today. So it depends when people are listening. We're recording this Friday morning, like 8 a.m. So fairly early Friday morning. I wanted to get it out to you, give you a chance to listen before fall camp starts. It's closed to the public. We will still be there covering the team. They'll have a Friday and a Saturday practice, then Sunday off. Then probably Monday is when the first time you'll see shoulder pads come on this year. But, you know, everyone's talking about the quarterbacks. We can talk about that too. But, you know, what are you kind of looking forward to seeing this fall? And what's really kind of important to you that's something important that USC needs to do for fall camp to get ready for the season?
You know, I think the quarterback thing is, I mean, they don't have much time. I mean, I think if it were me, there would not be camp would not end in 2 weeks and go into a mock game week and then a game week. I don't think you need two, you know, game week preparations for UNLV or for the season. So, and the kids, when you talk to them, they really like the all out competition, and where it's just football and it's not so much game prep of the camp. I always thought, for example, that's the best football we see USC play all year, when they just, you know, it's not, you know, going through the game plan and all that kind of thing, but it's just football. And I thought it was interesting. The one quote I thought was interesting from JT Daniels, who they must have gotten in back in May, I guess, when he was technically still in high school and they could talk to him. Joey Kaufman got a quote where he said, "I realize I'm going to have very little time to win the job," which is very perceptive when you think of first 3 days of practice are not in full pads. So that's really not exactly the same way, you know, that you're going to play the games. And so then you've got the rest of the first 2 weeks, and then you're going to, you know, mock game week. Well, when you get to mock game week, whether you've named the starter or not, you're kind of, you know, going through the motions to some extent, and you don't have the same maybe ability to just flat out compete. So I think I would like to see them keep it as much like camp and as much like competition as I think Jack Sears, you know, called it all ball. We get the, you know, all ball for camp. And I'd like to keep it like that all season. You know, I think one of the things we sometimes see is USC maybe spends an inordinate amount of time getting ready for the other team. I think that was kind of a Lane Kiffin, Steve Sarkisian way of doing things through their, you know, their quarter. Both of them are quarterbacks, and now here comes Clay. He's another quarterback. And I think that's how quarterbacks get, you know, get ready for games. But I'm not sure that works with the whole team. I think there are other ways, if you're an offensive or defensive lineman, that you get ready for games. And, you know, for example, I short yardage situations are really important to your offense. But how often do we see them lining up, you know, at the goal line or any short yardage where they just busted up in there? And really, you know, not a lot of times, not a lot of plays, but really a lot of physicality and a lot of just as live. This is like it's, you know, going to be in the game, and let's do it. And we don't see that as much as maybe we used to. I think that's really important. So I'd like to see that. And I know, you know, Clay is saying the right things about much more 11-on-11 live. Team action, live bullets. He said he wants to, you know, and seeing it through the quarterback's eyes, which I think Clay does. He wants to see the quarterbacks having to react to Porter Gustin in their face and all that kind of thing. I just like to see the whole team have to react to people in their face and people moving fast and people coming at you like it's a game situation and people in pain. And I think that's what's going to, I think, determine this season. If they figure out how do we get game ready, how do we compete all season, how do we push ourselves, How do we get better? How do we have a team that's better by the end of the year than it is right now? That it keeps competing, keeps getting better, keeps pushing itself, and the coaches keep pushing them. You know, I'll be interested in November if they go to no pads. I mean, I think that's a mistake. You know, I think you make some smart decisions about when you go no pads. But the idea that, you know, boy, if we can get to November, we can go no pads. No, that's not necessarily the way you want to go. I mean, that's kind of like UCLA when they had the, under poor Rick Neuhauser, when they were jumping the fence, you know, so they didn't have to practice once they got to November. That's not USC football, I don't think. No pads November is not the way for USC to go. So that will be the thing I'm watching, is just how hard do they push one another? How hard do they compete? Do they figure out how to do that? How much pressure do they put the players under in practice so that they don't have to gear it up when it's game time? You will play, what better defense will the USC offense see than the USC defense? And if they can get ready to play against the USC defense, they got to be able to, you know, play against any defense they're going to play against this year. But that has to happen in practice. And making it happen in practice, I think, is really, really important. It was the genius for a while for Pete Carroll. It's what got them back, what got USC back to the top, is they had really good players, better than they realized they had, I think. But they turned them into, an absolutely great program because of the way they went about practice and the way they made one another better. And that was something that happened all year long right up to the bowl game. And it's an attitude, and it's just a way of looking at things. And I'd sure like to see that restored.
That I think your answer there, or what we were talking about, kind of led into two of our first questions. So I think it's you were in tune with what the fans want to hear about. Here's the first question about the quarterbacks and blitzing.
Hey, Ryan, Curtis from Moreno Valley. I hear Clay Helton is going to throw live bullets at the quarterbacks. I think that going against one of the best defenses in the nation who like to blitz a lot, every day in practice, we'll find out who can handle the pressure the best. It's not about who's the most accurate. You got to be able to handle a serious blitz coming at you and still be accurate against man coverage, tight man coverage, and zone. So let's see who's the toughest against the blitz, because it's going to be coming. What are your thoughts, Curtis in Moreno Valley?
Yeah, Curtis, I mean, that is certainly what Clay is saying. I do think the way you handle the blitz is by being accurate and by, able to, you got to see the field. I think that's, so one of the things I think you'll notice is who sees the field, who sees who's going to be open almost before they're open. If it's a blitz, you just have to execute right through it. And then you have to deliver the ball on time, on target. And that's the hardest thing I think to do in practice, is to simulate live bullets for quarterbacks. I mean, we found that a couple of years ago, they really weren't able to do that with Sam Darnold and Max Brown. When you got that yellow jersey on, they're not going to hit you. So they tend to, with the play breaks down a little bit, that's the end of the play. Well, as we found out, Sam made better plays when the play broke down, but he didn't get a chance to do that in practice because practice didn't simulate real live game situations for Sam Darnold. So the more you can do, the genius, I think, of coaching any level, any sport, is the ability to get your players to the place that they're going to have to be in games. And, you know, the genius coaches know how to do that. And that's what separates, you know, the great coaches from everybody else. So I do think the good news is the fact that you really do have a three-man quarterback battle, if you want to call it, and that you really do have to figure out how that's going to go, will force the defense to be allowed to really go hard. Because you do want to see who's going to adjust to it, but again, I think they've got a defense that that could, you know, on paper, be better than any defense they're going to face all year. So it's the perfect way to get this offense, you know, ready and up to speed if they really go at it. And I do mean, like, if you're going to be run first, you have to really seriously run your run offense. And you got to run it at short yardage situations. You got to run it to the point where you're not going to make mistakes and you're not going to penalize yourself. If you do that, that really makes it hard for a run first offense. You got to execute. You got to be pretty flawless as a run first offense, and you can't whiff any blocks. You can't, you know, run guys up in there where there's, there are a couple of extra defenders at point of attack than there are, you know, offensive people there. You got to get your schemes right. You got to just have, you know, a lot of things that you really do know what you're doing, and you got to, you know, figure out how to get that done on the practice field. But I do think having a defense like this will really help you figure out who that quarterback is. And, I don't think it has anything to do with what class you are, how old you are. It's a lot of other things that will determine. I think we've probably, at the level of coaching and the level of sophistication, the level of competition that quarterbacks are at now, that are at the level of USC, being a freshman probably doesn't, you know, change that at all. If you've been, throwing to pros since you were in grade school, you're probably at a different place than, say, a quarterback would have been 10 or 15 years ago. And it's a different, as we've seen in the national championship game, you know, with a freshman quarterback winning it for Alabama last year, with a freshman quarterback the year before, getting Alabama to the championship game, with a freshman quarterback from Georgia, getting Georgia to the, you know, championship game this year. That doesn't matter. You know, just the, you know, used to be, I'm trying to think who it was. Maybe it was, I don't know, it was Darryl Royal or Bear Bryant or whatever, when freshmen became eligible. And the story was, you could figure out for however many freshmen you're going to, you know, start, you're going to have a loss. So look at your lineup, and if you've got however many freshmen are in the lineup, that's how many losses you're going to have this year. Well, that's not the case anymore, I don't think. I mean, you know, you just play the best players, and they're at a level, I think, of ability to handle what's coming their way that was not the case. And I think, you know, JT Daniels, the program he played at last year, had they been intact, that modern day team probably would not be at the bottom of the Pac-12 this year. Just a guess. And so he's coming from a different place. So we'll see how that works out. But I think you're onto something there, Curtis.
Yeah, Curtis. And then Don also touched on something, or is asking a question about something you touched on. He said, well, he wants to know, he has a few questions. I'll say, over under for fall practices and pads. We'll start with that. He had a few quick ones, and then without pads, do you actually have competition in practice?
Well, you do, but it's different. I mean, I think it probably doesn't impact, let's say, the cornerbacks and the wide receivers as much. I just think, I don't know how you have full day practices for the offensive and defensive linemen not in pads, that impact them in the same way as if they are in pads. I just don't know I mean, that doesn't mean you have to go, you know, an hour and 45 minutes for those guys in pads. But I don't know how you get that much better at your craft as an offensive lineman in a practice where you don't have pads on. I just think it makes it too much of a, you know, kind of a walkthrough type practice. Or you know, it's like basketball a little bit. And so I just think football is made to, you know, you play in pads. And when you've got a full roster, which USC essentially has a full roster now, I think you can, you practice it, and there would be days where you don't have as much full pad action, but that doesn't mean you don't have them on. And I thought USC was able to, in the past, they practiced shorter practices, more intense, more competitive, but shorter. And, you know, you got to see the, you know, the ones against the ones, maybe a little bit more, not for a lot of plays, but enough that every day you were going to go against the best defensive lineman if you were an offensive lineman. And you had to, you know, bring your A game. And it also, I think, gives a chance for the guys that aren't the starters to compete. It's hard if you're out there not in pads. I think it's really hard if you're a backup to beat that guy out in front of you, if all you're doing is walking through stuff, as opposed to actually really, you know, running the offense the way it's going to be in a game. So I think it engenders more competition if you're in pads, and that cannot be a bad thing. You don't want to wear them out. You don't want them to leave their game on the practice field, but you want it as close to, you know, real football, real game, you know, pressure, real game physicality, real game tempo as it can be. And I don't know that it can be that if you're not in pads. That's the way, that's how I look at it.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Jason in Longhorn Country, so obviously he's in Texas, and he's got a question about someone that's from Texas. Based on what you've seen, what, in your estimation, is holding Levi Jones from getting more playing time on defense?
See, I'm not sure that's the right way to look at it. I think John Houston had a really bump up in his, ability. I mean, and Cam Smith, obviously, you know, has been playing since he's been a freshman and was better from the first day than we ever thought he was going to be. So you've got, and so that's basically, I don't know if Cam was a five-star or a four-star. I guess he was just below a five-star. And John Houston was a five-star and put on weight and really, he came a long way, I thought, last year. Really started to, you know, feel at home. So to think that, you know, Levi, there's something wrong with Levi's game, I don't think that's the case at all. I mean, I don't have that same sense that he didn't get where he's, destined to be. I do think there's been a little bit of an issue of trust in terms of all the guys who aren't starters getting into the rotation. And I think that's got to change this year because there are just so many guys that really deserve to play. So I think they've really got to figure out the rotations, but I don't know that that's on Levi. I think it's more on they just, you know, and they had so many games where it looked like they could have been in control, looked like they should have been in control, and then something would happen and they take, you know, some plays off and they weren't in control. And so you were a little bit hesitant to maybe rotate as much as they should have rotated. But I have, you know, very high hopes for Levi and think he's going to be, you know, a major factor. But, I mean, there are so many linebackers. I mean, they had a lot of linebackers and then they recruited this class. And so there's an awful lot of linebackers. So it's not necessarily something you could say, well, what's wrong with this guy? It's just there's a lot of guys that probably should be on the field. So I think and it'll be nice to see for Longhorn Country if we Levi got a chance a little bit last year against Texas and made some plays, and I think that'll be fun to see where Levi is game three when they go to Austin. I know he'll certainly be looking forward to going home, and I think they USC will take advantage of that. But I don't have any feelings that Levi hasn't done what he needs to do or what he should do, or isn't where he where we expect him to be.
Yeah, I do expect to see a lot more of him this year, but we shall see. It's one of those things we're going to watch in fall camp because there's a lot of linebackers, like Dan said. Wanted to thank Trader Joe's before we continue on with these questions. We are still working on a USCfootball.com Trader Joe's event at or on campus or next to campus at the USC Village with no open practices. There wasn't going to be like a clear event we could do something before or after a practice. I don't think it's going to really work out around Salute to Troy as well. That's like move-in time for students, so it might be kind of crazy. So we're going to work something out. It might be the week leading up, the week before this last week of like camp. I guess not camp, but the last week leading up to the UNLV game. We're going to try to work something out because I know everyone loves those USC-branded Trader Joe's bags. So we're going to try to have an event on campus or around it where we can give those away. And we've had former players come out. Last time we had Clay Helton come out and we did a live broadcast from there. It was all kind of fun stuff. So hopefully we're still planning something like that. But I want you to check out Trader Joe's. We love going, my wife and I love going to the one in Hermosa Beach right near our house. And I know, Dan, you love going to Trader Joe's as well.
Yeah, the one in Tustin. I was there the other day. So absolutely. I was wondering if, and just this is totally off the top of my head, If you went all the way to right before the first game, would they ever let you do something involved with the jock rally and maybe encourage people to come out to the jock rally on the Friday before the opener or whatever? That might be if you were looking for an on campus one.
Yeah,
that might be the one thing with the band and the cheerleaders and all the players and their families and. Maybe there'd be a way you could set something up at, on the plaza or whatever. Anyway, just a thought.
That's a really interesting idea. So I'll have to check. Usually when you ask USC for permission for something, they say no, but we'll see. we'll see. That's a good one. I'll run that by our people and see. That would be great, though, because there'd be people there. It would be a reason for, fans to come out, opening the season and hear, hear some of the pep talk going on before, the night before the game. So that would be a good one, Dan. We'll have to try that.
Yeah. And it is interesting when you do get the nose and all that, because I just saw that if you noticed, only one Pac-12 coach went to Bristol, David Shaw from Stanford.
Yeah.
And I was interesting. John Wilner of San Jose pointed out that they were all kind of invited and encouraged, and that David Shaw was the only one that actually made the trip this week. I don't know about you just wonder what the Pac-12 instincts are for getting involved with people outside and getting involved with things that promote the brand and all that. I just think that the instincts do not seem to be there. The kind of things that, whether you like him or you didn't like it, whatever, Pete Carroll had those instincts, in just overflowing amount of those kinds of instincts. And it doesn't look like, you have that much in the Pac-12 anymore, that, from, inside the Pac-12 or, administration or outside, the different schools. I mean, I think the story came out of Arizona this week that Arizona had the worst attendance in years and years in football last year. Okay, so they've got a Heisman Trophy candidate, Khalil Tate, and a brand new coach. And Khalil Tate is being kept off limits for the first nine practices. No one's allowed to talk to him. And the new coach, Kevin Sumlin, is only going to be available for two practices of the nine. That's insane. I mean, are you kidding me? The people, how do you not try to promote your brand if you're in Tucson and you're and you've got something going for you? You got a new coach, you got a Heisman, you know, trophy candidate, quarterback, and you're not letting people talk to him? What's going on? I mean, it's just, I really don't get it sometimes in the Pac-12. I mean, at least USC's in a kind of a different place, and a really different place in L.A. this year, since people across town are trying to figure out what to do about UCLA, because Chip Kelly has brought in the, you know, the typical college football coach mentality with practice for clubs, and availability is way cut down. So I know people were trying at UCLA trying to figure out, well, how exactly do we cover this team now? I mean, it's, they'll cover it the way people cover other teams around the country, but it hasn't been that way in LA. We haven't heard much about that,
right?
But that's going to be an interesting dynamic, the way that plays out between USC and UCLA.
Yeah, because they start this morning, UCLA. So Friday morning, UCLA starts, USC starts 4 p.m., you know. So a week into camp, if you're reading the LA Times or something and you're getting all these stories from USC and not much from UCLA, then you're like, hey, what's going on? But that's all about access. So it is weird when one school, you know, usually they both stay open because it's hard to compete with the other one if you're closed and they're open.
Right. And I think it's interesting that, you know, UCLA is not in school. They're, you know, the quarter system. They aren't in school for usually 3 weeks into the season. So they've got the time. It's not like they got, you know, going somewhere. But we'll see. I mean, you can do that in a, you know, small college town when you're totally in control. But when you're in L.A. and you're, you know, the Chargers are here and the Rams are here and the Dodgers and the Angels are going and LeBron's coming to the Lakers. I'm just not sure that's a strategy that's going to pay off. I wouldn't think.
Let's go to Mike in the Bay Area. He says, question for Dan. I heard Porter Gustin talking about having to get more food for the players and helping them with their nutrition plans. My question is, why is he having to do this? Is there a lack of funding or just nobody there to handle this part of player development? I'm very happy he spoke up about this, and I'm guessing it was addressed and fixed permanently and not just a temporary fix for the summer. Thanks for all the content and hard work put in the website. As always, fight on. And I don't even know if you read this, Dan. So this morning in the war room, I put a little blurb in there as well that's probably not going to sit well with USC fans. You have to read it. Go to the war room and you can read it. But there's some real questions out there, Dan, concerns about if Porter Gustin, why is he having to do this kind of stuff like Mike is saying in his question?
Well, yeah, and from what I understood, it was more a case of not enough variety, that it wasn't interesting enough food for everybody, more than the quantity. I mean, I'm not sure they're going to be able to provide the 10,000 calories a day that Porter eats. Who eats so much that he has to put it into a smoothie because it just wears him out to do all that eating. But and yet, you know, when Clay talks about Andrea, who's the football nutritionist, he can't say enough good things about her. We've talked to her and she, you know, seems to be on top of things. But when you compare what USC does to some of the big boys in college football, you know, Alabama and Notre Dame and Michigan and Florida and Texas and what have you, probably not there. And, I like it that you've got the players speaking up, that you've got people like, you know, Porter and Cameron Smith and those guys saying, this is our team and this is what we need and what have you. You wish they probably wouldn't have to do that. That's probably not not the best way, but USC's been, I think, a little bit behind the times, although Clay, I mean, flat out says nobody's got a better nutrition program. So whether, you know, that's after Porter or as a result of Porter, it doesn't look like they're they object to the fact that Porter is speaking up or that, you know, he's making his point. And it does look like they try to react to it positively. But you're right. You wish it didn't have to go there. You know, USC's learning. I mean, it's changed so much so fast that it's not always that easy for USC to keep up. I mean, USC hasn't been, let's say, on the cutting edge of college football, you know, competitiveness since those early years with Pete when they made the big jump. And they've been stagnated a little bit. The NCAA decisions, the roster limitations, they were, you know, in survival mode for a while. And so I'm just not sure that USC is quite aware of, and being in the Pac-12 hurts because the Pac-12 isn't in a place where Ohio State and Michigan are, where, you know, the SEC schools are. And I don't think they quite understand, and whether it's right or wrong to put a $15 million, you know, food place that Alabama has that, you know, might be the nicest restaurant in the state of Alabama right now. I'm not sure USC quite understands, you know, all of what other people are doing. Is that right or wrong? I don't know, but, you know, this is the way the game's being played. And Porter probably shouldn't have to be doing anything to make it clear this is what we need, you know, in the nutrition program. He should be a resource, but it ought to be a case of, I think, USC coming to the players and making sure they understand what the players need and what the players think, as opposed to the players having to go to USC.
Yeah, I agree with you there, Dan, and make sure everyone out there go check out the War Room. It's already, the thread's already pretty long. It's been only up for an hour or two. Earl in West LA had a question. I keep hearing incredible things about this 230-pound freshman running back from Indiana. He's talking about Marquis Stepp. Can you tell me a little about him? How has he performed at the PRPs?
Well, he surprised me. When you see a kid 6 foot, 230 pounds out of the Midwest, and as a Midwesterner, you know, I'm a little prejudiced against them being, maybe let's say, quick-footed, having really live feet. You think, okay, a power guy. You know, the thing Marquise has shown me, and I know he had some limitations because of injuries, so you didn't see the stats, and you wonder what does that say, and you don't know. And again, you don't know what offense did they run and how did they use him. What we've seen is he fits right in with the other three. They're all, you know, 215 or so, kind of multi-purpose backs who can catch it and, you know, run with power and get to the edge. What he's shown me is really good hands and really quick feet for a 230-pound guy. The ability to change directions, the ability to, you know, be fairly nifty, you know, with his footwork. And I wasn't expecting that. I just wasn't. I mean, you don't expect that with a 230 pounder. So I think he's been a real eye opener this summer. And, you know, congratulations to Delane, you know, McCullough, who really, really liked Marquise. And I think, he's a lot closer to getting on the field than I would have guessed. I really like what I've seen of him a lot.
We got a couple more. We'll try to get through these quick and let you go, Dan. Nick in Cyprus, he said, He goes, my question is simple. I don't think it's really all that simple, Nick, but well, let's talk about it. He says, can you give us five names that you look forward to either being healthy or growing physically / mentally and leading this team to a successful season in 2018? So, like, I guess five kind of key guys.
Yeah, five guys. Yeah, you got to start with Stephen Carr. I don't think it's that big a deal. You know, I don't think the back surgery that they did was a kind of a structural thing, a biomechanical sort of a thing that you might worry about with back. So obviously, I think you start with Stephen. I think the next one is Daniel Motrababy. If he's loose and he's pain free with that hip flexor. That changes a lot of things. I mean, they've got to use those tight ends, but man, if he's ready to go, full go, I mean, they got a lot of guys that can play tight end at this point. And he was a real threat 2 years ago. I mean, watch some of those games, the game at Washington, for example. He was a difference maker. And so he'd be my second guy. I think my third guy would be Andrew Voorhees. He's had some stiffness in his back, and he had a little knee issue where it was swelling up on him. So I would want both of those things to be have him ready to go. Clay said he is, but I think he's the key. I don't know that right now they have the kind of depth in the at the offensive line where they could afford somebody not being there, and you want him to be healthy enough that he can be there at practice every day. You don't want him, having to, sit out practice because of a stiff back. I think they need to have all five guys in there and working together and getting their timing down. And that, I think that's really important. Let's say after those three, where do we go next?
You want to do like Christian Rector with his broken hand? Like,
I guess I'm not even sure he pays any attention to it. Now, I guess I think Toa.
Yeah, moving on, that's true.
Just to be playing center. I mean, he didn't. They held him out of contact in the spring, and he's had some significant issues. Although last year he pretty much got through. Clean as far as, injuries. He had the one issue with he missed the Washington State game, and I'm trying to think. It was that a staph infection or something like that? It was just something, out of the blue. But he'd be number four. And let's see, where do we go for number four?
Did you talk about Porter Gustin? He was out last year.
You know what? That's a good point. I don't even think of him.
Right.
I mean, when you think of how injured he was last year with the toe and the surgery and coming back and the bicep and all, I don't even think of him because you're around him and you don't ever even think of him as being injured.
No.
But that's a really good point. Yeah. I mean, he looks like Superman, but good point. I mean, that was almost kind of one of those ones where when you do something like that to your foot or your toe, some of that is basically you did it to yourself because you have so much power, and you can only build up your feet so much. I mean, it's not like you can do weightlifting that builds up your feet. So I think we got him. I think that's the five right there.
And we got one last one. Yeah, that was a good one. Thanks, Nick. And one last one from Tarek. Does the Pac-12 falling behind in funds have anything to do with the quality of officiating? Seems that every year it gets worse.
I wish you could make that connection, but I think they pay them same as they pay everybody else. I think that's pretty standardized across the country. And you don't have the ability, for example, the NFL might hire them, but no college conference is going to be able to pay, what the NFL pays. And so, and there isn't anybody coming in and stealing Pac-12 officials for, say, the Big 12 or whatever. So so I don't think it's a dollar and cents amount. I think the Pac-12 has always paid the, you know, the going rate. I know they move it around a little bit in terms of, I know with basketball they were experimenting where they would give you a set amount and you would do your own travel out of that. And there are other years where they would pay you according so much a game and then also pay for your travel and hotels and all that. So I know that they've done some different, ways of paying officials, but I don't think the Pac-12 falls. Let's face it. The Pac-12 pays everybody.
Yeah.
They just don't get paid the same amount as everybody else, but they do pay. And so, no, I don't think that's the problem. I think Pac-12 was more impacted by politics of, you know, from this state or that state, and guys just didn't seem to get any better. And the young officials, all the, you know, the good young officials in the western part of the country weren't able to get into the Pac-12 for years. And so they went other places, and some of them would, you know, go to the NFL because they couldn't get into the Pac-12. But I don't know that the Pac-12 was as aggressive in going out and finding the best officials in the WAC and the Mountain West and recruiting those guys. And I think they're doing a better job. I like David Coleman, the head of the Pac-12 officials. I think he's a good guy, and I think he's really trying. I think the culture is such that it's still a little difficult. I mean, it's just, you know, you wish you could figure out. I mean, I got to know in previous lives Big Ten officials and SEC officials, and got involved with how they did things. And for some reason, those two conferences, those officials just seemed more comfortable being officials, and more comfortable in crowds, and more comfortable under pressure, and more comfortable looking at what they were doing. And the Pac-12 seems a little bit more under pressure, the officials do, in terms of getting things right or making calls that, I mean, we've seen it for years where, you know, it's easier to make a call against USC for some reason. That's not the case. In the Big Ten, it's not easier to make a call against Ohio State or Michigan. In the SEC, it's not easier to make a call against Alabama or Georgia. In the Pac-12, for some reason, it was easier to make a call against USC. I don't know why, but it was a difference. And you tell me. I've seen it, and I don't know. But
yeah.
But I don't think it's money. But it's been a culture that has just built up over the years.
The Pac-12 did lose Lan Clark to the NFL, so there was a list of like eight or so NCAA officials that the NFL hired away. Only one from the Pac-12, so it was Lan Clark, who seemed like, you know, kind of a buttoned up, you know, fairly professional guy. I don't know what you thought of Lan, but
I think so. He was he looks like he was a guy on his way to the NFL.
Yeah,
they've actually lost one of the problems is the NFL is good at coming in. If you get a good young guy, especially a referee, he isn't going to be long in the Pac-12. The NFL will hire him. And that's been kind of a problem. And maybe, you know, you don't have the depth of officiating. Yeah. I don't know. But
if you're terrible, Dan, they'll keep you. That's what's good, right?
You get the NFL isn't going to touch you. Yeah,
no.
The NFL won't touch you. I will say this. The Pac-12 does look like it has more guys who probably haven't played football in their lives. You do get guys that just don't quite look like they're ex-football players. And that wasn't the case. In the Big Ten and the SEC, most of those guys look like they played football. I don't know if there's that famous play where a former Kentucky linebacker was an umpire. And I'm trying to think what somebody, maybe from Alabama, guy came across the middle and he just ducked him. I mean, he just knocked him, you know, just knocked him flat out down. That wouldn't happen probably in the Pac-12. You do have guys that look like they're having maybe a little trouble keeping up with the physicality and the speed of the game at times, and you didn't notice that as much in other places that I've been, where you look at a guy and you say, gee, I wonder how he got out there. What's exactly going on here? But not as much. It's better. But the first years I was out here, it did make you wonder, how in the world is that guy, you know, did that guy get there? And, you know, yeah. And it was an issue, for example, I think, for a while, there were two referees from California with, what, almost 40 million people, and two referees from Oregon with, like, 4 million people. And you just wondered, huh, Oregon has got the same number of guys in the white hats as California does. Huh, I wonder if that makes sense. And, well, of course it doesn't, but that's how it was.
Yeah. Crazy stuff. Well, we'll see. We get to complain about the officials, do all kinds of fun stuff in just a few weeks when the season starts. So, Dan, great stuff. Looking forward to see you out there at practice today. Going to practice today. We'll see you out there later this afternoon.
Yeah, that is the fun part for us. And it is makes, you know, you can't complain when you get to go to practice. I mean, that's what this is all about. It's what it's all about for the coaches and the players and for us. And that we get to do it is really cool. And you do see a lot of things, and you get a sense. And hopefully we'll be able to pick up on that right away for everybody. And what we try to do is the public's not allowed, but, you know, we try to bring you along with us so that the approach is we're having you standing next to us, and you're seeing what we're seeing, and you're hearing what we're hearing, and you're feeling what we're feeling. And so we're trying to be your eyes and ears and give you a sense of being present at practice. And I know this, I try to allow you to see it through my eyes, but also give you the space so that you can make some of your own judgments. And I'm not going to try to make all your judgments for you. I want to let you see what I see, and then you come up with your own conclusions as best we can do that. And so that's why it is so good for us to be able to be at practice and allow you to, you know, come along with us and see it through our eyes.
Yeah, that's the goal, and you got to go on to the Peristyle after practice, read Dan's ghost notes. We'll have tons of video, and we'll do more podcasts, but lots of stories and interviews coming from USC practice. So, Dan, looking forward to that. Make sure you check out Dan's work over on USCfootball.com. I'll be there as well. With the entire team, we'll be out there bringing you exclusive coverage of USC fall camp. Exclusive in a way that only way we can do it, because that's what we do at USCfootball.com. But thanks to Dan, and thank you all for listening to the Peristyle Podcast, and we will talk to you next time.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting, and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.